I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You are very welcome to the Ireland's Birth Stories podcast. My name is Cora Gernon. I created this space for women to share all of the details surrounding their pregnancy, labour, birth and everything in between without feeling shy about the detail. Sit back and enjoy over 100 hours of birth stories told by you, the listeners.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
No, I might die. I am. I might die.
I had to include that. I have two little helpers here as I record the introduction. As you can still hear them. So, yeah, sorry. I just had to include that. I thought their voices were so cute. I hope you all had a great week and are enjoying the sunshine. I am not a sun worshipper, so to avoid the sunshine and the heat, which has just been extraordinary, I have had the blinds down the past couple of days and the windows closed because I've had two kids who've had temperatures for the past 10 days between the two of them. So it's been a tough few days, but thankfully we've no temperatures as of yesterday. So I think they're on the mend, and I'm trying to make the most of the next few days. Oliver's gone back to play school in 2 weeks and I feel like I haven't done much for the summer at all. This is the first time I've felt like the summer has been really short. I think that's because he's in school now, in play school. Anyway, on to this week's episode. So I'm sharing my chat with Grania, who is the founder of River Skincare. Grainne talks me through her three pregnancies and two births. So her first pregnancy was a surprise, and she shares all the details surrounding discovering she was pregnant. And something that I thought was quite funny was actually when she said she told her mother, and her mother said, "Could you not have been more careful?" And I think we've all heard that with different scenarios in our life that our mothers have said to us. So she had an emergency C-section with her first birth experience, and then she went on to have a partial molar pregnancy, and had a missed miscarriage at about 6 weeks. So she shares all of the details surrounding that. This is actually the first time I've spoken to someone who's had a partial molar pregnancy. So that was really interesting to hear. And obviously it's not something that anyone wants to go through. So tough as well. But Grainne has a really strong intuition, and I think she highlighted it a couple of times throughout the story. She then went on to get pregnant again, and she had to wait 6 months for her HCG levels to come down before she could. So she got pregnant for a third time and gave birth last April this year to her little boy Elliot. She didn't want a cesarean birth this time. She put a lot of preparation in, but she did eventually give birth via a cesarean section, and she shares again all the details surrounding that, but felt it was a completely different experience to her first experience. So she felt amazing going into those early postpartum days, which is a complete contrast to how she felt the first time around. So this is a really nice story, although, you know, every experience is just completely different. And I think this story highlights that even someone who has two vaginal births, each, like my own, they're both very different in so many ways. So although Grainne had two cesarean sections, they're both very different. And it's so nice to see her face. I actually saw her face change when she was sharing her second birth story, as she was talking about her experience. Her tone of voice changed. I just saw a smile growing on her face, and it was just gorgeous to see. So thank you so much, Grainne, for sharing your story. I really appreciate it. As I've said, I've linked her in the show notes, River Skincare, and she will be joining us when I do get the event finalised. She will be joining us at the event to chat about postnatal skincare as well as antenatal. So thank you again, and I will chat to you all next week.
Okay, so Grainne, you are very welcome to the Ireland's Birth Stories podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's amazing to be here after listening to 100 and something episodes. It's mad, a bit mad.
Do you want to go ahead and just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you and your business as well, if you'd like?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So my name is Grainne Callaghan. I am from a village called Raharney in County Westmeath, and I'm the owner of River Skincare, which is an online skincare consultancy. And I do like skincare training and stuff like that as well. I'm engaged to Steve, and I have two little boys. I have a two-year-old called Teddy, and I have a three-month-old called Elliot. So just 2 years between them. They're both little April babies.
3 months. I can't believe that 3 months has flown. I'm sure it hasn't quite gone. It's gone quite as fast for you, but I just feel like that's flown by.
Oh, no, it has. It's absolutely flown. The last couple of years have flown, because Teddy, my first baby, was born in the very first lockdown. So
yeah,
it's just been like a different, since he was born, just everything. Like, I know being a mother makes everything different, but like the whole world is just a different place than it was before. So like, yeah, it's been a mad couple of years.
So talk to me about your first pregnancy.
So my first pregnancy was not necessarily planned. It was a lovely little surprise. It didn't feel very lovely the day that I found out. I was actually in work. I found out by myself in McDonald's on Grafton Street. So it's definitely not the kind of romanticized idea that I had in my head of when I'd actually find out that I was pregnant. I thought it would be this lovely moment, whatever. But no, I was in the toilet on my own in McDonald's. And I'd been in work, and I just kind of felt weird. I just felt like funny or something. And I was like, oh my God, I'm pregnant. And then I was like, no, I can't be. You know, you get the fear sometimes when you're not expecting it. You just like, you convince yourself that you are, and then you never are, you know?
Yeah.
But then and you spend your whole 20s, you know, trying to avoid it.
I know,
and,
yeah.
That's the fear of God into you then, you know, the Catholic guilt as well. You know, when you're not married, it's like, oh no, what's mommy going to say? But so, yeah, I did a test in McDonald's bathroom, and texted my friend Anne-Marie, and I was like, you'll never guess what. And she's like, what? And I was like, I'm actually pregnant. I was like, this is one of those times where it's actually happened. So yeah, I went home from work early because obviously I was a bit in shock. I actually went back to Boots on Grafton Street and told the woman who sold me the pregnancy test that I was pregnant, because she had like said to me, best of luck. I was like, oh yeah, thanks. Yeah. Like absolutely like scared out of my mind that it was going to be positive, you know. It actually, you know, when you do the test first and it looks like it's negative for a second. So I saw that it was negative, and then I like turned around and like flushed the loo and like was getting my stuff together. And I turned back around to look at the test to throw it away. And then I saw that it was positive, and I swear I nearly vomited. I got such fright. Anyway, it was fine. Oh, sorry, you know.
Did you have a late period, or did you feel off, or what made you take the test?
I just felt weird. I just got a feeling, and I know that sounds mental, but it was like, it happens like with another kind of element of my story where I just got a feeling. And like, I don't know, I wouldn't be big into like, oh, like I know female intuition is a big thing or whatever, but it wouldn't be very kind of airy-fairy or whatever. But I just had a feeling that I didn't track my period. So my period used to just turn up and I'd be like, oh, there you are. Roughly the same time as last month, you know. I never really kept an eye on it, you know. But I just had a feeling and did the test and told Steve, and he was absolutely fine. He's like, oh yeah, grand, sure, look it. At this stage, we're old enough. We've had our crack, you know. We might as well we were talking about buying a house down the country, and we were saving for a house, and like things were in motion, kind of going that direction anyway. So like it was totally fine. I rang my mother then a couple of days later. I was like, yeah, you never guess what? And she goes, when are you due? Like,
oh, stop.
I was like, how? And I was like, how do you know? And she just goes, oh, how could you not be more careful? I was like, I'm in my 30s now. I actually don't know what age I was. I think I was 32. Yeah, I was 32. It's like 32, mammy. It's grand. She's like, oh, I suppose. But yeah, it was a fairly okay pregnancy. Like I was working in a fairly high pressure job, and I was working very long hours, and there was a good bit of sickness there. But it was around the 12-week mark that I started to get pelvic girdle pain. And I know that's really early. It was very unusual. I was later diagnosed with actually having a condition called osteitis pubis, which is like, it's quite unusual. It's quite rare. It's like an inflammation of your pelvis. So I suffered with that throughout the pregnancy really, really badly. I was on crutches for a little while. And then at the very end of the pregnancy, like it totally eased off. But it was so bad. It was so debilitating because you couldn't move. And I used to do a lot of events and a lot of talks and stuff in front of like large groups of people, and I'd have to limp up to the stage, and I used to find that so embarrassing. I'd be like, I'm a young woman and I'm limping around, you know, like an owl one basically. I was just like, oh god, I'm like hobbling around. But that eased off, and then it actually came back then after the baby was born. Like a few months later it came back, and I've actually had it ever since. So I still have issues with it now, and with the subsequent pregnancies obviously it gets worse, and then it improves afterwards.
So what did you do? Did you go to physio, or was physio offered to you? Because I suppose you couldn't really take Norfen or anything like that to ease off the pain.
Yeah, so the pain was uncomfortable, but it was never unbearable. So I never felt as though I had to like take a lot of pain medication. It was just more of a limp, and my gait kind of changed as well, the way that I walked in general. It wasn't a constant pain, so it would kind of come and go. So you'd have a couple of good days and where it wouldn't be as, it's the same now. You have a couple of good days, you could have a good week, and then it'll come back, and then you're hobbling around a little bit. I went to the doctor, and you know when you're pregnant and there's something wrong with you, you get dismissed by everybody because you're pregnant. So they feel, first of all, as though they can't treat you either. Well, they can't treat you because you're pregnant, or they think, oh, it's just, you're just pregnant, it'll go away. You know, this sort of an attitude. So I was diagnosed after my pregnancy with the osteitis pubis, so that the bones were actually inflamed. I had an MRI, and then I was advised by my GP that there's nobody in Ireland that actually specializes in it, and that I should just try a physio, or try an osteopath, or try a chiropractor, and like just off you go. But I still have not found anybody in Ireland that specializes in it. There's somebody in Australia, but like it's a little bit far, you know, to go for a bit of treatment. So I haven't been able to find anyone. So I go to an osteopath, a local osteopath, Xavier, and he's really good, but you only get relief for like a couple of weeks. But the cure for it is rest. So you're supposed to lie up for about 3 months. Like not really possible. I just have to kind of rest when I can, and just kind of take it easy. And I do a little bit of swimming and stuff, and that kind of helps. So I just kind of have to live with it now at this stage and just hope it goes away by itself.
So how was the rest of your pregnancy then? If it kind of eased off in the final trimester?
Yeah, so the final trimester then it eased off. I went on maternity leave. Teddy was born on the 1st of April and I went on maternity leave at the start of March. And this was COVID March, I call it. Okay. So where everything, where the shit hit the fan basically. And I had two of the greatest weeks of my life. The first 2 weeks in March where I knew I was going to have 6 months off. The anticipation of having this baby. I was getting, like, we lived in this gorgeous apartment in Clontarf in Dublin. And I was getting everything ready. I was clearing out every press. I was just in full on nesting mode. Went to the cinema in the middle of the day. Like, talk about princess pregnancy. Like, I was just having the best time. And then COVID happened. And then I kind of spiraled a little bit when that happened. Because, you know, obviously the anticipation and the worry that's there having your first baby. Especially because I didn't really prepare. So I didn't educate myself on childbirth. I was of the mindset that I'll just rock up at the hospital when I'm in labour and they'll sort me out and I'll just kind of do what I'm told and I'll leave it a baby and then I'll forget about it. Or I'll have a horror story, like all the horror stories that you get told, and then I'll just be one of those women with a horror story, but like my baby would be fine. That was just kind of my attitude. It was just like, go with the flow, you know. If I knew then what I know now, you know. But it was grand anyway. Teddy's birth wasn't obviously, it was an emergency C-section. So what happened was I was going in for my 40-week check. So I was at home stressing about COVID, stressing about everything. I was Googling restrictions. I was terrified that Steve wouldn't be allowed in with me, that I'd have to do it on my own. I knew that my family, like my sister and my mom and my other sister lives abroad. So I knew she wouldn't be able to come home to see it. So I was really stressed out about all of this kind of COVID crap that was going on. And then I went in for my 40-week check and I chose to wait outside the back of the hospital because I didn't want to be in contact with anybody in the hospital because this is very early COVID days. I was wearing a mask and nobody else was. This was before mask wearing became mandatory in medical settings. So I was wearing a mask and I was trying to be really cautious. And so I waited outside the back of the hospital instead of inside. And I was eating a granola bar. And I must have been the nicest granola bar of all time because I was engrossed in it anyway. And I fell down three steps out the back and I landed on my front. Now, the bump didn't hit the ground or anything. It was fine. But I felt the baby kind of jerk forward when I fell. So I didn't panic because I was kind of like thinking to myself, if you're going to fall, this is probably the place to do it. Like, there's lots of people here that can help you if anything is wrong. I was like, can't just keep yourself calm. I went back in and I sat down. I knew I was going to be called really soon because I'd been waiting a while. I was called in. They did a check on me and there was an internal exam was done. And the lady said that the doctor said that she could, the lady, just some woman in the hospital just gave me an internal exam. The doctor said that they could feel the baby's head and that everything was looking okay. And that maybe baby would come in a few days. They weren't like, I was only 40 plus two, I think 40 plus one. Actually, so there was no major pressure being put on me or anything like that. And then I just kind of said, this is another time where I kind of got a feeling. And I just said to her, I was like, look, I don't feel right. I was like, I've just fallen out the back. And she was like, oh, yeah, you'd be all right. There's plenty of cushion in there. You're fine. You know, like the baby's OK. And I was like, yeah, I was like, I'm sure it is OK. But I was like, I just don't feel right just going home after that fall and after feeling the jerk, because I did fall, like it was three steps, so I don't know, like 2.5 feet, but like down onto my hands. So I just didn't feel right going home and I knew I'd be worrying at home. And I actually asked her, I said, can you put a trace on just to make sure that the baby's okay? And I didn't know if I was having a boy or a girl, so I was like, if he or she is okay. And she was kind of reluctant about that. She was a bit kind of like, oh yeah, go on, sure, I'll send you down or whatever. And she sent me down. And I never forget going into the area where they take expectant mothers for monitoring. And they were all looking at me like I had 10 heads because I had this mask on me. And they're like, do you have symptoms? Do you have symptoms? And I was like, no. I was like, I'm trying to avoid having symptoms. They were making me feel really kind of, oh, I don't know, like a lunatic. Like I was some sort of crazy person with a mask on in the corner, you know, and me 9 months pregnant, like trying to protect myself and my like little family or whatever. But anyway, they put a trace on and everything was fine for a few minutes. But then there were some D cells in the baby's heart rate, and the heart rate was dropping. And then lots of people just kind of came running into the room, and the obstetrician came in and they were checking everything. And I was like, that's not good. I was like, because I could hear, you know, that you're looking at the monitor yourself, yeah, you're kind of figuring stuff out, and you're not stupid. Like, you can kind of figure out this stuff, that things are kind of going down or up or whatever. So I knew that there had been a D cell in the heart rate. And basically, an obstetrician just came in and examined me, and it was a brutal examination. I'll never forget it. It was just so painful, so uncomfortable. I was so worried, and like, it wasn't being explained to me what was happening. It was one of those moments where, like, it's kind of like, we'll talk to you in a minute. We're kind of doing something here. We're kind of busy. So I started to get quite worried, but I wasn't panicking. I'd be fairly level headed in like emergency situations most of the time anyway. And she said, look, you're over 40 weeks. We're going to induce you because we don't like that deceleration on the monitor. And of course, because of maybe my ignorance, I was just like, yeah, go on, yeah, no, fine. I didn't ask any questions, anything like that. So I was brought upstairs to, I rang, actually, do you know what's mad? I'd actually just texted Steve and said, I'll be leaving in 5 minutes. And then I had to text him 10 minutes later and be like, this baby's going to be here in a few hours. It was mad. Like, and I remember asking him, I was like, could I go home and get my bags maybe? And they were like, no, you can't just waltz out the door, go home, get your bags, you have to stay here, like, this baby's going to come soon, we're going to make sure of it, you know. They're a little bit worried or whatever, and they love to induce people, so I was just one of those. But anyway, so I went upstairs into, they put me straight into the labor suite, and then Steve was allowed in, because I was on my own in the room. And they broke my waters straight away before they gave me any Syntocin. Is that what it's called? Syntocin, isn't it? Yeah. Before they gave me any of that. And I was lying there for about 5 hours, and things were very, very slowly progressing. And then they started to progress really, really fast. And you know, they say when you're induced, your surges are much stronger, that you feel a lot more pain. Like, I don't know any better. So like, I was just in so much pain, and I was like, oh my God, this is cracked. Like, I can't manage this at all. And I just remember thinking, how, because my mother has 7 kids, I'm the youngest of 7, and she did it all naturally, obviously, because it was years ago. And well, she could have had an epidural when I was around, but I don't think she knew it existed. Do you know what, that's it, she'd had 7, so, or she'd had 6 by the time I came along. And I just remember thinking to myself, how did my mother do this 7 times, like, and without any education at all or any knowledge of pain relief or anything. But anyway, so I got the epidural, and I had the epidural about 7 minutes, I'd say. And the midwife that was with me, so there had been a changeover. And the second midwife that I was with, she was quite disinterested in me. She was just kind of sitting at her computer. I wasn't really a concern for her. She never examined me, which is fine in hindsight when I think back. She never examined me. She just kind of left me there. And if I asked for something, she got it, which was absolutely fine. Like, you know, it seemed to be grand. It was just kind of me and Steve, you know. But she kind of panicked, and she was obviously reading my vitals and looking at the baby's heart rate on her computer. And then she came over and she started to frantically move the what do you call it? The thing, whatever you call it, on my tummy that was monitoring the baby's heart rate. She was frantically moving it around my tummy to try and find the heartbeat. And she rang a bell behind her, and I just kind of knew that there was something up then. And this midwife, they couldn't find the baby's heart rate. That's what they said. Like, we can't find the heart rate, a heartbeat. And I was just like, oh my God. So they never said that it decelerated. They just said, we can't find it. So the second midwife said, the first midwife, she's like, have you rang them? And she says, yeah. And she goes, you better ring them again. And then all of a sudden, I can only describe it as all hell broke loose. It was just porters were running into the room. Oh, just everybody. Just, there was, must have been about 12 people in the room, like, or maybe, like, in hindsight, it was probably less than that. But I felt like I was just crowded around by people. Steve was just kind of pushed over towards the window in a nice way. He wasn't like literally pushed. He was just asked to kind of step back, like, we have to do something here. And I just remember this porter saying to me, he just said, you don't have to do anything. I'm going to drag you across. And he just grabbed the sheet that I was on and he just yanked me across. And they literally ran out the door of the room with me lying on the bed. And I just remember looking at the midwife being like, what is going on? She's like, you're having And she's like, you're having an emergency C-section. We can't find the baby's heartbeat. He has to come out right now. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, I'd literally just had my epidural. I was just starting to kind of feel a little bit more in control of the situation. I was just kind of getting my mind around to, oh, I'm going to be pushing a baby out in a few. I was just kind of settling down after kind of the fall and the worry and the induction and the all that. So I just started settling down and then this happened. So they literally, they ran down the hall with me. I didn't know what Steve was doing at this stage. And I started to get quite, and like I said a few minutes ago, I'd be quite level-headed in kind of emergency situations, or like if somebody fell ill, or like you could kind of rely on me to be the voice of reason. But like I kind of lost my marbles a little bit. And I just remember starting to kind of cry and just be like, oh my God, I was so panicked. I was like, what is happening? The next like most awful thing that happened was everyone was shouting, looking for the anesthesiologist, and they couldn't find him. And Steve told me afterwards that he was outside the door and they were trying to put him into scrubs so that he could come in, but they weren't sure if they could do it on time. But he said that the anesthesiologist was down the other end of the hall, and the midwife that he was with was like shouting at him, being like, we've been paging you or beeping you or ringing you, like, where have you been? And he's like, I was with a patient. She was like, get up here now, like, hurry up. And Steve said that he was down the other end and he was like fiddling around with do you know those like yellow scrub things that they put on their front before they go into a different patient or whatever? He was just down the end of the hall fiddling with one of them. And he was like, he was in no way panicked whatsoever. So anyway, I remember him arriving into the room and there was this really nice nurse behind me. And he was just like, he looked at the anesthesiologist and he literally was like, where were you? And I was like, have you been waiting for him? I was like, what's going on? Like, I was like, what? And he goes, yes, we were waiting for him. He's like, close your eyes. And he just put a mask on. And then the next thing I know, I woke up in the recovery room.
Under general?
Yeah, they had to put me under general then because they didn't have time, I suppose, to do anything else. It was literally just like knock her out straight away type job. So they put me under general anyway. I woke up in the recovery room. I woke up with a midwife was pulling I'm quite good at my words usually. I'm just like forgetting all words today. She was pulling my gown down and she was just putting the baby on my chest, but I literally had just woken up. And the first thing I said was, this is mental. I looked at the baby and I was just like, whose baby is that? She was like, it's your baby. I was like, and I just kind of remember looking around and being a bit like, but I'm pregnant. I don't have a baby. Do you know, it was just kind of, oh my God, like this is not. And as well, Teddy kind of looked different than I thought he would. And he had a really big dimple in his chin and he still does. He has the most sensational chin I've ever seen. But it's just nobody in my family has this little dimple chin, do you know, this little bum chin. And I was like, whose baby is this? I was like, what is going on? And then, because I didn't know the gender, because I've always had like this idea in my head, you know, like, is it a boy or is it a girl? Like that exciting moment, you know, when you find out. So I said, oh, is it a boy? And this nurse just went, of course it's a boy. And I was like,
Jesus.
Thank you. I was like, for ruining that lovely moment I've just been waiting like 30 odd years to have. I was like, I think she thought that I knew already or something. I don't know. I don't know why she answered me like that. But as well, now, in fairness, Cora, I was under a lot of anesthetics. So maybe she wasn't even that mean about it. That's just how I remember it. But I had the baby on my chest anyway then. And I was kind of reconciling myself to the fact that he'd been born, and Steve was beside me then at that stage. Steve had been holding him while I was still asleep. Yeah. And he'd been eating the blanket, like he was a real hungry little fellow when he was born. And then I was trying to kind of latch him on then straight away and stuff, but sure, I was out of my mind with shock and pain medication. You know, you wake up from a general anesthetic, you're not really with it, you know. Sure, I didn't know what I was doing. And then Steve had to leave. So Steve was with me. He said he was with me for about 5 minutes after I woke up. But to me, it felt like about 30 seconds. It was just like, I was like, what do you mean you're leaving? I was like, where am I going? I was like, what? Like, I just couldn't. I was just so upset. And
to get over or to wake up from a general is tough without the shock and without your baby being placed on your chest. Like, that is a lot. It just all sounds so heightened and intense, and it doesn't feel like you had the person that you needed there who could kind of like just bring it all down for you, make it a little bit more manageable. I don't know if that's the right word, but you know, just maybe just comfort you a little bit more.
Yeah, I think it was like, it was the speed of it all. It was like, I went in for an appointment and then suddenly I'm in this crazy emergency situation where everyone's screaming at each other and everyone's like really genuinely worried. Like it was just, oh, it was mad. Absolutely
and
mad.
Fall
you
as well.
Just not expecting like, it.
It was just
bedlam. Oh my God, Cora, talk about like drama of a day. Like, my God. But I think Steve, honestly, the worst part of the whole thing was Steve leaving. I was like, I cannot believe that they expect me to look after this baby now after everything that's just gone on. And I was kind of like, and the baby looks weird. Might not even be my baby. I was losing my marbles. I was like, that chain. I was like, nobody in my family has that chain. I was like, who's this kid, you know? But I got over it after a couple of hours or whatever. But that was it. That was about 1 o'clock in the morning. And I went back to the what do you call the place where you go after you've had the baby? The something ward?
I don't know.
Postnatal ward.
Postnatal ward,
Jesus.
It's half eight.
Oh my God. I went back to the postnatal ward anyway with Teddy and I remember asking one of the nurses came in and she was like, oh, there's Teddy. And she was helping me and they were great. And there was loads of student midwives and they were coming in and they were picking him up and handing him to me and all this sort of stuff. And they were just brilliant. But this midwife came in and it was about 6 a.m. He was born at 1. And this midwife came in about 6. She goes, oh, there's Teddy. And I looked and I was like, that's his name, isn't it? Yeah, it is Teddy. And she was like, well, yeah. She was like, well, his daddy gave us his name and we've put it down and la, la, la. And I was like, all right, I was just checking because we had decided on Teddy, but we'd never like been together and had the baby there and looked at each other and we're like, oh, his name is Teddy. Like we didn't even have that minute where we kind of confirmed his name, you know? So I was literally asking the midwife, like, yeah. So Steve said, yeah. Okay. I was like, okay, we're good to go. It is Teddy then, you know? But yeah, the midwives were brilliant. And I was so obviously tired and like in shock and obviously sore and like there was a fairly substantial blood loss and stuff like that as well. So I was very weak. But like I said, the midwives were just brilliant. I wasn't very good at asking for help. So like at one stage I was using, you know, the way you have the wire and the bell is on the end of it and you're supposed to press it obviously to ring for them. But the cot had somehow been pushed away from me and Teddy was in the cot and I was trying to use it as like a lasso to try and catch, because I couldn't get out of the bed. So I was using the bell to try and catch the edge of the cot and pull it over. And this midwife came in and she's just like, that bell works a bit better if you ring it. And I was like, okay, I'll ring it from now on. Sorry.
It's hard to.
Swinging it over my head.
Yeah, it can be hard to. Like, you're just like, no, so someone else needs them more than I do. When in fact, you are that person that needs them.
Yeah, exactly. That's literally what I was thinking. But the ward that I was on was a 13-person ward and it was so loud. And I just remember I didn't sleep for a couple of days because every time I would doze off, if my baby wasn't crying, one of 13 or 10 or whatever other babies was crying. And I just got to the point where after it was like the next morning, so it had been like 30 hours since he'd been born, I just said to one of the women, I was like, I'm checking myself out today. I was like, I have to leave. It's like, if I don't sleep, I'm going to kill somebody. Like I have to sleep even just for half an hour. So they moved me into a smaller room. So they were great. They were so like, they were really trying to kind of help, you know, and they moved me into a smaller room then so that I could obviously get a bit of peace. And then there was no one in the room. Everyone checked out. So I basically had a private room for free. So it was the best thing ever. But then day three came along and my milk came in on day three. And obviously the emotional kind of aspect of everything, like a lot of the medications and stuff had worn off and I was kind of getting back to normal, or not get back to normal, but I was just kind of getting my wits about me again. And then like the milk came in and then I had to go home. And then I knew I was going to see Steve for the first time since I'd had the baby. And I was kind of upset about that, not upset about it, but I was emotional kind of thinking about being like, oh, here's your baby. I know he'd seen him already, but I just kind of was emotional about the whole going home thing. And I just was so upset that day.
This was day three and Steve hadn't been back in.
No, Steve, I hadn't seen Steve since he left the recovery room the night that Teddy was born. So seeing him again was kind of this big thing in my head. I don't know why I kind of worked it up. But I was just so upset thinking about everything that had happened. And I was just kind of, the baby blues and everything and COVID. And it was just like, it was an awful day. So bringing Teddy, the day I brought Teddy home, like, I look back on pictures of it and I'm like, look at him. He's so small and he's so cute. And look at Steve and look at us bringing him into our little home that we had made for him. And all that's lovely. But when I think back to actually how I felt that day, I remember just being like, why am I not happier? Like, I'm supposed to be delighted. And I remember being really, really annoyed, being like, stupid COVID and stupid fucking falling and stupid everything. I was really, really angry at everything. And I was just like, get me home and let me forget about this. But I brought him home. Breastfeeding wasn't going very well. There was no support available. And in fairness, that was more so because of COVID. Nobody could come out to the house to see you. And I couldn't see anyone. And I should have done a lactation consultation, like over Zoom or something. But like I said, like COVID had kind of only just kind of kicked off, so people weren't really set up yet, and I wasn't really married to the idea of breastfeeding. Like, my mom had never done it and my sisters had never done it, and not that that should affect what I do, but it did. You know, they were kind of like of the mindset, oh, a fed baby, as long as you're feeding them, like, and as long as you know how much you're giving them. It was always this kind of thing of how many ounces did he have and how many ounces is he going to have and when's he going to get more. And it was just this numbers thing. So I just kind of started bottle feeding him then, and I used to latch him on the odd time. And like I said, he was a hungry little guy, so I used to just like fill him full of bottles. He was a big lump of a baby then, you know. Things were fine, and we moved out of our apartment in Dublin. And we bought a house down in County Westmeath, down in actually the village that I'm from. And we moved down there. And everything was hunky-dory with baby number one.
So how did you feel? Did you feel like you needed to maybe get like a debriefing, or needed to really process everything that went on?
I felt as though like I maybe brushed a lot of what I was feeling under the carpet, and I just kind of like, it was always kind of niggling at me that I wasn't like feeling 100%. I don't think I was at the level, like I don't think I had PND or anything like that, but I was just a bit sad for a little bit longer maybe than what would be deemed as hashtag or quotes normal, you know. I was just, I got my notes when I decided to get pregnant again, and I went through them all, and look, I remembered everything.
Okay.
Anyway, the notes didn't really give me anything else. I could have done with it. They offered me a debriefing the day I left the hospital, and I declined. I just wanted to get out of there and just try and forget about it, and just try and get on with things, you know, and hopefully cheer up. That was what I did, you know. After a couple of months, the odd thing would kind of trigger you to remember like how things went down or whatever, but it was fine. After a few months, when I started especially thinking about having another baby, it kind of that really helped like lift my mood. Like, it was like, you nearly get a second chance to do it again and kind of do it right. If there's a right and a wrong, you know. Teddy was about 18 months old, and we decided to go again. I was hoping to, he wasn't actually 18 months old. He was 18 months old when I got pregnant, but we decided when he was about 9 months old to attempt to have another baby, because we were kind of hoping to have them close together, you know, and kind of rear them up together. So the Christmas after he was born, we kind of said we'd just see like what happened, just kind of not be careful, you know. And by the 2nd of January, I was pregnant. So I got pregnant basically immediately again. So that was great, you know. We were really, really happy. It was completely different, obviously, finding out I was pregnant. That time I wasn't on my own in a fast food restaurant, for one, which is always a plus. I was really happy about it this time, and my mum didn't give out to me, so it was good. I was about 6 weeks pregnant, and I'm going to talk about these feelings that I have again, Cora. You're like, this one is cracked. But I woke up one morning when I was 6 weeks, and I just felt kind of It just felt a bit different. And I was just like, oh, God. I just thought to myself, the baby's dead. He's got, like, the baby's not alive anymore. I just had this awful feeling. And I hadn't had a scan yet, obviously, because I was only 6 weeks. So I was Googling private scans in the area. And there's a really good, in Mullingar, actually, there's a really good lady who does private scans. Sorry, little noisy baby here. And I sent them an email. And it said on their website that you can get a scan from 6 weeks. If you're 6 weeks pregnant, it's an internal scan. And if you're 8 weeks pregnant, they'll do it on the outside of your tummy as opposed to a pelvic scan. So I booked in for 2 weeks' time because I just didn't want to have an internal ultrasound. I was just like, I just didn't feel like it after Teddy and after everything. I just was like, no, I'll just get one on the outside. I just wasn't too fond of the idea. And I went in at 8 weeks and hopped up on the table, and she put the wand across my tummy, and she just looked at me and was like, how many weeks are you? And I was like, 8 plus 3. And I looked at the screen and I could see a fetus, but I knew there was no life there just by what I just knew by looking at it. I couldn't see anything flicker or move or anything. She goes, well, just look for a heartbeat. And she pressed a button on the ultrasound machine to see. She could pick up the heartbeat, and then there was just this deafening silence in the room. And she just said, I said, that's not an 8 week fetus you're looking at. She goes, no, it's 6 weeks. So right around that time that, like, I woke up with one of my feelings, would have been around the time, I'm not saying it was that day, but it would have been around that time that the baby died. So it's actually quite an unusual situation. So I didn't have, it was a missed miscarriage, obviously, because there was no bleeding or there was nothing like that. But I actually had what's called a partial molar pregnancy. So a partial molar pregnancy is a really rare form of miscarriage where two sperm actually fertilize one egg. So the egg gets two sets of chromosomes from the dad. So it usually stops developing at around the 6 week mark, and then you'll miscarry then. So it's really, really unusual. There's a molar pregnancy that you can get, which is where one sperm fertilizes the egg, but then just a growth grows. There's no baby, but the partial molar that I had, there was like a little fetus. But that was fine. But because I wasn't miscarrying myself, I had to book in and have a D&C done. So I went in then the following week. So that was Friday that I was in having the scan done. And then I had to go back in. And after you have a partial molar pregnancy, there's actually a risk involved with having a partial molar pregnancy that you can develop cancer in your womb due to the abnormal growth of cells. So they monitor you really, really closely. So I was referred to CUMH in Cork, and they have a thromboblastic monitoring section there. So I had to go into the early pregnancy unit in Mullingar Hospital every Monday and get a blood test done. And I had to get that done every week until my HCG level dropped below 5. Okay. So usually if you have a miscarriage, you might get pregnant the following month or 2 months later. You don't have to wait for your HCG to drop. It can take like 6 months for your HCG to go completely down after you've been pregnant. So it took from, I found out that I was pregnant on the 2nd of January, and I didn't get under 5 results until June. So there was still HCG in my system until June. So I wasn't allowed to get pregnant again until that had gone down to below 5, so that they could monitor if it rose again. So if it rose again, that would mean that there was an abnormal growth within your womb. So it was really, they were really strict on that. They were really like, you just cannot get pregnant again. So after like having a miscarriage, like, it's just the need to get pregnant again is mad. It just kind of takes over. You really just feel as though like that's what you have to do in order to kind of rectify the other side, not to rectify it or forget about it, but just to, you just want it. And then to be told that I wasn't allowed, I was really annoyed. I was like counting down every week. I'd get my blood test results and I'd be like praying and praying that it would be below 5. But anyway, it was fine. It went down below 5 in June. And then I got pregnant again in July. And that baby was Sir Elliot, who was born just there in April. The baby you just saw a few minutes ago.
And with the partial molar pregnancy, could they see that on the scan, or was that as a result of the DNC? Could they see, how was that diagnosed?
So as a result of the DNC, they sent the products of conception, as they call them, off to be analysed in the lab, and that's how they found it. So if you have a molar pregnancy, they can see it on a scan because it looks like lots of little cysts, like a bunch of grapes, but a partial molar because there is a fecal pole present. They can't tell just by looking at it.
Okay.
So it's mad.
Yeah, and then I didn't realise that it takes so long for your HCG to drop. But I know even after my own miscarriage, I kept testing until I saw that negative test, even though I had miscarried. Yeah. You know the way, I know some people have done that before, and it's not until that you see that negative test that you really kind of come to terms with it or believe it. But I didn't realise it took so long. So when you did see that positive test with Elliot, how did you feel?
I actually didn't think, I just remember being like, oh no, it was so faint, you know, when you're an early tester, and it was so faint. And the last two times that I'd been pregnant, I'd had implantation bleeding. So even with Teddy, which wasn't planned, I had had implantation bleeding, because when I found out I was pregnant with Teddy, I remember thinking, oh, I thought I was getting my period there. Then I did the maths in my head and realized what it was. And then with the partial molar pregnancy, I had implantation, but with Elliot, I didn't. So I actually thought that it hadn't worked, and I thought that it was going to be negative. So then I saw that really, really faint line. I just remember taking pictures of it with my phone and putting like different filters on it to try and see if I could like see a darker line, you know, you're chasing that line. Then you get line eyes and you think you're seeing lines when there's no lines there. Oh, look at. But no, I was delighted then. I was like, right, okay, this is, and I knew, and again, me and my feelings, Cora, I have a lot of feelings, but I just felt like, oh, this is fine. This one's going to be okay. I just kind of knew that it was going to be all right. I think female intuition is just amazing.
Oh yeah.
We don't give ourselves enough credit for it. Like, it's absolutely wild. But yeah, so I was kind of limping around that summer anyway with the pelvic girdle pain, and then I got pregnant. And so after about 8 or 9 weeks, then the pelvic girdle pain got really bad. And I started going to that osteopath that I mentioned. He gave me a little bit of relief, and I was just kind of getting on with things. I started my own business. So River Skincare that I mentioned at the start, I started that when Teddy was 6 weeks old, or 6 months old. And so all throughout my third pregnancy, I was just working away, trying to kind of count down the days. I really couldn't wait for Elliot to be here. I felt like I knew him already, and I just kind of felt like, he has to be here. He has to like join our little family. It was so weird, because when I was pregnant with Teddy, I loved being pregnant so much that I nearly didn't want him to come. I was more like, look at me here, all pregnant. And I know, I think you've mentioned it before, how waiting for your baby at the end can be the hardest thing ever. And I'm like the complete opposite. With Teddy, I was literally just like, whenever, like, give me another week of peace. It's no problem. I'll see you when I see you, kind of thing. But with Elliot, it was totally different. I was just like, oh, where is he? When's he going to be here? How many months am I now? How many weeks? How many days? You know. But with Elliot's pregnancy, I decided to prepare myself. So I decided to get a couple of books. I decided to follow the correct and the right people on Instagram. I just kind of made a few really good decisions on like educating myself and put myself in the right frame of mind to hopefully have a vaginal birth the second time. So a VBAC was definitely something that I worked very, very hard to try and achieve. I was doing hypnobirthing. I read Ina Mae Gaskin's book, which was like the best book I've ever read in my life. Oh my God, it just like totally opened my eyes, you know. I had a consultation with a lactation consultant and doula. I wasn't going to hire a doula, but it was definitely, I just wanted to talk to one about VBAC and like get her advice on like the best ways to go about trying to have one, you know. So I got some amazing advice. I read some amazing books. I really tried to educate and prepare myself to have this vaginal birth that I didn't kind of get to have the first time. I felt very excited to go into labor. I loved your birth story where you spoke about how much you loved labour and that it was like you could just do it all the time. And I was really hoping that, like, I didn't think I could get to that level, but I did think maybe it'll be this amazing experience. And I really looked forward to, like, labouring at home before I went into hospital and the whole process, you know. So it was totally different. Like I said with Teddy, I just rocked up to the hospital when I was told to and did what I was told and didn't ask any questions, you know. So the second time or third time I was pregnant, but the second time I had a baby, yeah, it was totally different.
So nice to hear that you got that sense of excitement, because obviously with experiences like your first one, then when you can come into your next, coming up to your next experience with, you can be fearful. Did you feel like you had to work at kind of shedding that little bit or parking that to allow the excitement to be at the forefront?
Yeah, completely. And I think the main thing I had to let go of was that I actually, like, I know best. Not all of these, like, obviously I'm going to take my doctor's advice, I'm going to listen to medical professionals, I'm not going to be like, excuse me, I know more than you do. But sometimes I feel as though I did, and I had to advocate for myself. And I'm a fairly confident person, and I really felt as though that was that really went in my favor. I think if I was a little bit more shy or quiet, I wouldn't have been able to kind of fight for myself. And I met this amazing doctor in hospital, actually, and I was a public patient, but I met him on, I was like 28 weeks, I think. And he was so supportive, and he had the evidence, and I asked him questions, and I asked him why he was suggesting certain things, and he had the answers for me, and I felt really confident in his care. And I just said to him, I was like, I know I'm a private or a public patient, I was like, but could I just see you every time that I come? And he was like, absolutely. He's like, I'd love to see you. He's like, just make sure your appointments are on a Friday. He's like, and come on in. He's like, that'd be great. He was like, we'll get you your V back. You know, he was really supportive. And that made such a difference. The only problem was I obviously had a cesarean before, but I was diagnosed with gestational diabetes at 26 weeks. And I was so raging because I had none of the risk factors, and I only barely like was over the threshold. And so that was a bit of a spanner in the works, because they do monitor you quite closely and they love to induce you, you know, when you've got gestational diabetes. And then it was the big baby train that unfortunately I boarded around the 30 week mark. So like both of my babies were big, and like Steve's a big tall man, you know, and I just happened to have slightly large babies. Like Teddy was 8'8" and Elliot was 9'8". So they're not giant. Like my sister had a couple of 10 pound babies vaginal without pain relief at home in her house in Holland. So so like this big baby thing, but he was okay. My doctor was fine. He was like, look, if you control your bloods with your diet, he goes, I'm not too concerned about it, because my BMI was fine and all that jazz. So at least he had a bit of a realistic look. And then I went into labor naturally at 39 plus six. So I couldn't believe it. I was like, spontaneous labor. I thought that it would elude me, you know. I thought that I'd go like way over and have to fight against like them trying to induce me, you know.
Tell me what it felt like.
Oh, it was amazing. I was like, oh my God, I'm actually in labor. I was like, this is wild, because I had never been in labor with Teddy naturally, you know. I'd never had a twinge, I'd never had anything. I was just induced, you know. So on the Thursday night, I started to have a few pains, and I was saying to Steve, oh, there's something stirring, but I was like, it's nothing major, look, we'll stay quiet and say nothing and hope for the best and see what happens, you know. And then on Friday morning, I started to get a few more twinges, and I was like, no, it's nothing major. And then I started to lose my mucus plug, and contractions started to get a little bit stronger then on Friday evening. So I waited as long as I could, and in hindsight, I should have waited about 6 hours longer. But because it was my first time in labor, I still, even though I had done all this preparation, I do feel as though I got a bit of a fright when I went into labor, and I was a bit kind of like, oh, I need to be around people who can mind me if something bad happens. So because something bad had happened before, that kind of crept in. Once I went into labour myself, that kind of came back. And then, of course, you know, like Steve would be worrying about me as well. He'd be like, oh, maybe we should go in to make sure everything's okay. And I definitely think my first experience, even though I spent a lot of time and energy trying to make sure it didn't affect my second experience, like it totally did in the end, you know. And so I went into hospital and Steve came in with me. Obviously, and he brought me in, and then he wasn't allowed to come down into the room where I was being examined. So COVID, unfortunately, affected my second birth as well. He wasn't allowed to come down with me. I was examined down below in one of the rooms and came back outside to him. We had a little chat, and then they came out and told me that they had to admit me because I was a VBAC. I couldn't go home to labour at home. I had to stay in the hospital. And in hindsight, I should have maybe just been like, look, I'm going to go home for a couple of hours and come back. But I didn't. I was just a bit kind of scared. So I said I'd stay, but Steve couldn't come in with me because I was going into the pre-labor ward. I wasn't going into a delivery suite. And it was 12 o'clock at night. So Steve wasn't allowed in. It was technically visiting hours only. So he had to wait outside on the chairs about 12 feet away from the room that I was in. And I was just like, this is the most stupid thing ever. And everything totally slowed down then. I was kind of managing through the pain and I was listening to hypnobirth. And I was on my own, but I was kind of trying to like maintain control of the situation. And everything just slowed down. And I wasn't allowed into the delivery suite until I either asked for an epidural or I was 4 centimeters dilated. So I was only 3 when I got there, and I declined a couple more vaginal exams because they were just dishing them out willy-nilly, and I just didn't want to have loads of them. So I declined them, and they were like, well, we can't let you into the delivery suite unless we know that you're 4 centimetres dilated. So I was like, right, just give us an epidural then to let Steve in. So I asked for an epidural, Cora, literally just so that Steve could come in, so that I'd be allowed into the delivery suite.
That's something that was that bothered me so much about the whole thing, was people having to have these exams to get I've heard so many stories even outside the podcast of women saying like they didn't, it's something that they didn't want to have to undergo, but that they had no choice in order to get that room, even though that they knew themselves they were 3+ dilated. It's just one of the things about COVID that's just really awful.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. It's just pointless. It's just needless. Like Steve, like I said, was 12 feet away from me. Just through a couple of doors. I used to walk out and talk to him. Like, it was just so silly. Anyway, I asked for the epidural and I went down into the delivery suite and I met this midwife called Tracy, and she was just this angel woman. And when I think of her now, I just got like all warm and fuzzy. I'm just like, she was just such a wonderful person. And she was just so kind to me and so sweet, and made me feel really confident. I was really confident in her, and I was really confident in her knowledge. And she was just brilliant. It was just absolutely amazing. So the anesthesiologist came in and he administered the epidural. I was having, to be honest, the pain in my pelvis from lying on the bed, and I was moving around as much as possible, and I was on my side and I was on the ball and I was in and out of the bed and I was doing all that crack. But the pain in my pelvis and from the osteitis pubis was more intense than the contraction pain or the surges. It was just out of this world. So I kind of got the epidural more for that, to be honest, than the actual labor pains themselves. It was intolerable. So the rest of my story, trying to get this elusive VBAC, is basically just I labored with an epidural. They gave me some Syntocin to try and speed things up. And then, Cor, it just got to a point where on Sunday evening, so this has gone on since Friday morning, and it was Sunday evening, and I was just, I gotten to the point where I couldn't cope anymore, and I couldn't manage my emotions, and I was still so uncomfortable with my pelvis and stuff. And once you get the epidural, you know, you're more stationary, and I had the peanut ball and stuff, but I just couldn't manage anymore. I started to feel really sick, and I started to get lots of pain in the top of my tummy, kind of where the epidural wasn't taking effect. But it was more, it felt like the most intense kind of indigestion or the most intense heartburn you've ever felt. And I was just lying there. And Steve said to me afterwards, I was kind of rocking, like I was just beyond, I'd gone into this other world. Even with the epidural, I was so uncomfortable and so tired, and it was just going on and on and on. And she asked me, could she check me again? So I consented that time, because I just, it had to end. They could have told me to dress up as a clown and jump out the window, and I would have done it. Like, I would have done anything at that stage. I was delirious, you know, the hypnobirthing went out the door, and it was just a case. It was just, I was in survival mode. I hadn't eaten anything. My blood sugar got really low, so I had 2 Polo mints. Like, you're supposed to be pushing a baby out. Your womb is a muscle. You have to feed a muscle, but all I had was 2 Polo mints. Like, it doesn't make any, I should have been eating. That was the next time, Cora, next time. You have to have 3 births in Ireland in order to have the one you want. So it just got to a point where I just couldn't manage anymore. And then they said that I had failed to progress. So I was going to have a C-section. I argued with them at that point. I was like, look, I've come this far. Like, can you not just leave me alone and just like, leave me alone and just see what happens? And they were just like, no, we can't, you've been in labor for too long, we're afraid of uterine rupture. He shouted a couple of statistics at me, and I was like, let's go, just give us the C-section. And I just gave into it. I was just like, after like 8 months of being kind of addicted to having a VBAC and being really dedicated to it, I just very easily was just like, you know what, it's fine, let's go. And I just kind of gave into it, and then tried to kind of get myself looking forward to meeting my baby again. Because, you know, you kind of forget when you're in that much pain and you're that uncomfortable. You forget what the end result is, you know?
Yeah.
Totally. But I started to feel really hot, and they took my temperature, and it spiked the temperature. And it was just stress and too muchness is the only way I can describe it. I was like, this is too much. I've had enough. But that midwife Tracy, she brought me back to life. She came over with like cold J cloths, and she like patted me down. She was talking to me really softly. She was just saying to me, she's like, you're going to have a C-section. She was like, they're going to do this, because I was obviously going to be awake this time. I know I'd had one before, but I was asleep, sure. So this was like my first one, you know. She explained everything to me, and she's like, and I'm going to stay with you. I'm going to go into the room with you. She goes, I'll grab the baby after he's born and I'll give him to you. And she was like, I've read your birth plan, and I'm going to do everything that I can like to help you through this. And then me and Steve were just like, oh, deadly, right, she's coming, we can just kind of relax. And so they brought me up. There was a bit of a delay. There was a couple of hours of a delay. There was a couple of emergency situations. So a couple more hours passed, and she had to calm me down again a couple of times. And then they brought me up, and I had the C-section, and I got to see him be lifted up. So it was such a world away from the last time. And I knew he was a boy. I didn't get a scan to reveal his gender, but I just knew that he was this time. And I just said to Steve, is it a boy? And Steve was like, yep, it's a boy. So this time I got to find out in a nice way, as opposed to the last time. And then they popped him on my chest then straight away. So it was like a completely different experience. It was really, really good. The only problem was I was so, because I had been awake for a couple of days, and they could tell by me I was a bit all over the shop and a little bit exhausted. They did separate me from Elliot after he was born. They took me to a recovery room, and they sent Steve off with Elliot. So that kind of upset me, because I was asking where he was, and I was asking why we were being separated, and they were like, you need to rest for a few minutes. And I was like, he's hungry. He's going to be like Teddy, you know, he's going to need to be fed like immediately. I had expressed colostrum, but I'd only a tiny amount. It wasn't really working for me, the whole expression of colostrum. I only had two mils all together, and I've been doing it for 3 weeks, you know. I really tried like to get some for him, but I just couldn't get enough. So they did separate us for a while, and I just remember giving out fairly hardcore. I was like, you need to get me out of this recovery room, bring me down to my baby. Like, I was going a bit mad. But they brought me down, and they gave me Elliot, and yeah, everything was fine. It was grand. And like, I got this lovely sense of happiness when I saw him, and he was so soft and he looked identical to Teddy. It was just like I'd given birth to the same baby again. It was so weird.
That chin.
What, do you know what? That's the only thing he didn't have was the chin. He had this, everything else was the exact same, but it was just the chin, you know. It was so funny. We were like, is he going to have this chin? You know, the chin that nearly tipped me over the edge. yeah, it was just like, you can even see me now, like how much I'm smiling just talking about it.
Yes, I was going to comment that your face has just completely changed.
And like, and every minute since he's been born, like when they lifted him up, I just remember getting this like little flutter in my chest and just being like, oh my God, this is what it was supposed to be like the first time, even though it was a C-section and even though it didn't like work out the way I'd wanted it to, he was still there and he was lovely. And I was so delighted. Like, and any, like, I call it the dark mist, any of the like negative feelings that I had had about my last birth just like lifted, and everything just, it's completely different. And I've just been walking around in this happy little bubble ever since. And he's nearly 4 months old now. And I feel like I even love Teddy more now since Elliot's come along, because you just see how Teddy interacts with him. And it's just, yeah, it's just completely different. It's great. It's deadly. Having the second one was a great idea.
And you were just feeding Elliot there. So you're still breastfeeding. How's it going?
Grant, I am combination feeding, and I have been doing so since he was born, and I have tried so many times to exclusively breastfeed, and it's never worked for me. So Elliot has one bottle of formula every day, and I've kind of just reconciled myself to the fact that that's just our way and that's just our journey, and I'm okay with it now. I wasn't okay with it for a good while, you know. Like, I was like, why can't I do have a low supply, and I have one very lazy side.
So does mine. Eva hasn't fed off my left boob for like well over a year.
Oh, no way.
She only feeds off my right. Yeah. So I understand.
Well, I'm the opposite. Yeah, but I have this tiny little amount on my right. I just kind of use it as a backup, you know, or as a soother, you know. Yeah, so it's going great. It's going obviously much better than the first time. It's not perfect, but look, it's our little way of doing it. And yeah, we're one happy little family on our holidays today, here now today. And we're all, yeah, everything's just great.
Brilliant. Thank you, Grani. That was cool. And just as you mentioned there, that you just smile so much when I talk about it, you could just see, you just lit up a huge smile just after you start talking about it. It's really nice, yeah, to see that you had that, you got that feeling.
It's totally different, yeah. But it's great. Everything's worked out. And yeah, so we're delighted with the two, and we talk about having a third, and I'm already like nearly upset thinking about the third one being my last one. I'm nearly upset in advance, you know. It's an awful feeling, but yeah, we've been very lucky that we have the two very healthy boys, and yeah, everything's great. And I can hear the youngest one screaming. So
go. Elliot wanted his mom, so that was the end of our chat. But I hope you enjoyed it. I thought it was a really nice conversation, really nice to hear how she felt in those early days in comparison to her first experience. So if you would like to share your story, you're more than welcome to, and get in touch over on the website irelandsbirthstories.ie. Click on the share your stories tab and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. If you've previously sent a submission and I haven't got back to you, give me a nudge and remind me. I'm not ignoring you. I'm just a little bit behind on my emails, as always. And if I could ask you a favour, if you have the time to pop onto wherever you listen to your podcasts, leave a rating or a review if you are enjoying the podcast. It goes such a long way. Enjoy the rest of the sun, and I will chat to you next week with a brand new episode.
Hold up.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.